It's my map.
No, I think that was the door outside.
Oh, okay.
This is September 20th, 2016. This is the University Archives and Special Collections Unit interviewing retiring Vice President for Community Affairs, Leroy Kennedy. And we're doing that in Galvin Library on campus at IIT. I am Ralph Pugh, University Archivist. With me and also participating in the interview is Adam Strome, Director of the University Archives and Special Collections. So thank you very much for coming over.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. My lead-off question is, as we learn about IIT history before, I think all of our times, the 1970s and 1980s were mm-hmm. a tough time for the university.
Yeah.
It was between the two mayor dailies. It was at a period of several quick-changing presidencies here. By the late 1980s, IIT is not very well connected with City Hall or the community. You're coming on at a pretty crucial time. Did you find that to be a challenge? What was your attitude coming in, knowing about all that?
Yeah, it was definitely a challenge. But I think what happened was, it was even before I actually started here, was that I had heard about the position of Director of Community Relations. And to be honest with you, I had no interest in it because I knew the school had not been involved in community activities, and I was quite a bit at that time. And but after a couple of conversations with a couple of colleagues that where I worked before and down at the Metropolitan Planning Council, one of them, her husband was working here in government relations at that time, and said the guy that I would be working with is a good guy, so I said, well, I'll go out and talk to him. So I had a meeting with Clyde Watkins, who was the vice president of external affairs at that time. We had a good discussion, good interview, and I also talked to a few other people here at the university before I started. So I think I just made the decision that I had the appropriate skills, talent, commitment, capacity to do something down here and make a difference. And I was told at that point that I'm the fundraiser. This is Clyde talking. He's the fundraiser and I'm the community guy. I don't know what you do, so just do what you need to do and make it happen. And it was a 3-year grant, and I was used to being on 2 or 3 year grants and contracts at that time. So it was a 3-year grant from the Kemper Foundation. And each year the university was going to commit more and more to the position of salary and the foundation less. So after the end of the 3rd year, I was under the impression I was going to leave. But stayed around and I was here.
Yeah.
So
initially you didn't anticipate this as being
a long
the rest of your career or
no,
whatnot.
Not at all.
But you felt you could come in and make something of a difference.
That's what the goal was. Yeah. And but you know, like you said, those were challenging times. I had been working with I knew of a gentleman who was here before me by the name of Nate Thomas, whose mm-hmm. primary position was to recruit African-American engineering students.
Mm-hmm.
And a number of people here on campus, faculty and staff, made the assumption or presumption that I was here to do Nate's job. And I said, no, I'm not a recruiter. I don't do that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that took about the first year.
All right.
But anyway, things worked out. I had a lot of relationships in the community that I had when I started here and just transitioned them in.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, the university was, as you said, going through some trying times.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say I had a degree of autonomy and to make things happen, and we did.
Yeah. In terms of your links that you already had in the community, what was IIT's reputation?
Isolationist. Not engaged. Everybody pretty much stayed away from campus with the exception of the students who came here.
Mm-hmm.
There were some exceptions to that when we hosted the, the Pro-Am tournaments here on campus in the mid-80s, around the Michael Jordan time, and then after that when he was trying to play baseball. But for the most part, school was not engaged. There were a lot of issues going on in the community at that time, particularly related to the construction of the U.S. Cellular Field. And individuals who were displaced by that were moved into the Gap community. Mm-hmm. And there was quite a bit of newspaper chatter, let's just use that word, about the issues between the new residents moving in and the community organization. Mm-hmm. And we were able to intervene in that and basically served as a welcoming committee to the new homeowners, property owners from Bridgeport, and moved over here.
All right.
And we even hosted a reception for them. It's called Getting to Know Your Neighbors. So we did it jointly with the Gap Community Organization and basically dispelled. The papers were trying to cut it as a class issue. Middle class African Americans, lower income, moving in. But that wasn't it at all. That was what the newspaper tried to trump up, basically. Mm-hmm. And the story was that people were just concerned about their property values and didn't think that the quality of homes that were being built were appropriate for the neighborhood, mm-hmm. and had some issues with them.
In terms of your work, it's a good question to pursue right now in terms of the media. How helpful or not helpful did you find the media early on in terms of putting a spotlight on changes down here?
Yeah, the media was great. For us,
generally good?
Yeah, because I had a very good relationship with our Office of Public Relations at that time. The way it was structured, they had a person that was assigned to the Community Affairs beat. So I was able to work directly with that person, in addition to the relationships I had brought with me, news people in the news, media, writers, editors, whoever that I knew. Mm-hmm. So, and I've been doing that most of my career anyway, doing most of my news stuff. So I just was able to do that. And we got some nice coverage, real nice coverage. I think I mentioned the one in the Tribune that I got that surprised me. Mm-hmm. It's titled, IIT is Not Forgetting Its Roots. At the time, we were expanding out to Moffitt and Rice campus, mm-hmm. and doing the downtown campus, but we talked about what we're doing here for the Parade of Homes and a lot of other things, so we got good coverage.
Good. All right. Sounds fairly smooth.
It was.
It's remarkable. Well, yeah, I guess a tribute to your connections and community starting off.
I mean that plus, again, the university didn't have what I would call extensive positive relationships. And we were able to cultivate those. There was something that was started before I got here called the Southside Partnership. Mm-hmm. And that was something that kind of started out of a request from the community, if I recall correctly, to retain an in-school scouting, a Boy Scout program at Douglas Community Academy. Mm-hmm. And that was something we all kind of galvanized around, that, you know, the importance of an in-school scouting program. So we had a group called the Southside Partnership, comprised of IIT, the Gap Community Organization, Chicago Urban League, Center for New Horizons, and two or three.
Hi.
Hey, Jim.
I was waiting downstairs.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
So we're just kind of picking up on what was here.
Did you want me to record this, or...?
Well, he's doing this now.
Okay.
So
sorry.
I don't think we need to do a video.
All right.
You guys don't want a video, do you?
We don't
unless
need
it for own purposes, yeah. But yeah, we don't.
If you want it, go for it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah.
All right. My phone then for you.
Okay.
So.
Yeah.
Anyway, just so it was IIT, Gap Community Organization, Chicago Urban League, Center for New Horizons, Elliot Donnelly Youth Center, and maybe it was two, Urban League and Urban League Development Corporation, Center for New Horizons, Aconitum Community Development Corporation. That may have been it, five or six organizations. So that was the all-volunteer group that kind of worked on issues that were community-based, institutionally-based. Oh, First National Bank of Chicago, that's who mm-hmm. the other party was. They were the convener.
All right, okay. You know, one question that we get in special collections and archives a lot is, not a lot, but enough, mm-hmm. Is what was IIT's relation with the community that just always seems to come up.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like from what you're saying in terms of your coming on that there was more of a sort of a vacuum where things had allowed to kind of drift apart. You didn't have to counteract an active culture or understanding of negativity.
No, I don't think it was that so much. I think the approach that I took was that I was not going to be defensive. You know, we everybody knows IIT came in the community, tore half of it down, mm-hmm. built, you know, so everybody knows that history.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
It happened. That's what everybody did. I mean, domain, 40s, 50s, 60s, that's what institutions, that's what cities did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's not try to beat a dead horse. Okay, that happened.
All right.
We live with it. Now, where do we go from here?
All right.
So that's kind of the, that was the approach that I took. I'm not going to try to defend it. It's over with, it's done. What are we going to do?
Right.
Did you find that people in the community kind of still needed to have that conversation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so. But the thing was that, as I said, I came here with organizing credentials and a reputation. I'm one of the city's most well-known public policy groups, the Metropolitan Planning Council.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I came from after I've been there 3 years. I worked for Chicago Urban League, National Urban League, as well as community organizations around the city. So it was able to transition the integrity, I guess is what it was, a credibility to an institution that had little.
Yeah. When people would perhaps voice any problems with the university going back in time, what were the anecdotes they shared? People still remember the Mecca?
Oh, yeah. They remember the Mecca. I remember somebody told me about their barbershop was torn down when they built Herman Hall, mm-hmm. and the area that was really around it was actually literally was a bog beforehand. And I've had numerous stories of people that have had their homes or their family's homes or torn down or had to move. Or,
mm-hmm.
But, you know, as I said, folks, get over it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Like you said, you bring the credibility and you acknowledge the issues up front and say, okay, let's move on.
Right.
So it's interesting for the record how you did that.
Yeah, okay, I see what you're saying, but that...
Yeah.
I took quite a bit of latitude and stuff that I did. You know, I was of the opinion that
mm-hmm.
you ask forgiveness and not permission, so I do it and tell folk what I did. And
mm-hmm.
you know, I had pretty good judgment, so
yeah.
Didn't get the university in any trouble. Kept them out of line.
That's good.
Yeah. So one thing we're getting a sense of your career is that since you saw it as potentially short term. And you weren't trying to be a lifer here.
Right.
You had that freedom, and that actually helped you continue on for longer.
And I actually left after I was here 10 years. Honestly, I was dissatisfied with a lot of things that were going,
mm-hmm.
And I was offered another position, and I took it.
Mm-hmm.
And then David Baker, who I reported to, as I was an associate VP, he was a VP. Took me out to lunch one day and said he was sorry he didn't get to take me out earlier. And said they're getting ready to reopen the search process and that they haven't come to consensus on a candidate. I said, well, I might consider coming back if, in fact, some of the things that I had issues with were addressed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
we'll talk about that another day. And we did.
Yeah.
And they made me an offer to come back. I accepted the offer and came on back.
Mm-hmm.
I was gone for about 6 months.
All right. Well, we can't let you put that out there without us probing for a bit more detail in terms of the things that, after your first, what was it, six years here, you were dissatisfied with. Obviously,
be
discreet, however you want to be.
No, one thing kind of stands out, and I think it's kind of indicative. Maybe not. It was an intrusion into what I did, and because of that intrusion, I didn't think that folk understood what we were trying to do. Anyway,
right, okay.
The circumstance was
uh-huh.
President Lou Collins suggested or directed, intimated that we should do something like they did at the U of C and have a scholarship program for firemen and policemen, and we wanted to do something similar, but mm-hmm. twisted a little bit. So we had an annual dinner called Community Recognition Awards Dinner. That we gave recognition to individual faculty, staff, students, and then various community leaders. So we've done this for about 6, 7, 8 years, and all this is documented on our website,
mm-hmm.
Who they were. But the last 2 years, I was told to give an award to the sewer commissioner.
Uh-huh. You mentioned this at your farewell reception.
Okay,
Did I? But that wasn't on tape, was it?
So, no, but anyway. Yeah, it was, as a matter of fact. Jim got it.
Right.
And mm-hmm. I just, you know, didn't think that she was doing her job, you know. But that's how bad things were around here at that point. Mm-hmm. We had difficulty in getting the city of Chicago to do its basic duty. So when they got the sewer commissioner to clean out the sewers on campus, that was a big deal, and they wanted to give her an award for it. I said, well, she's doing her job.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I'm done. I can't
mm-hmm.
do this.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we gave a lot of awards away to very deserving community, faculty, staff, and student leaders. And it was a big event that brought 2 to 3 people here on campus every fall. And it was a way that we always had live entertainment, speakers, and the awards. Everybody got an award. Their families came, and elected officials. And I remember one night in particular was when Carol Moseley Braun was elected to the U.S. Senate, first African-American female. And she came to our dinner that night for something. But that was just a major coup that she was there. And then, you know, we just had really good events. But it was just that that directing on who to give the award to. Then there were some other things that, you know, there were the issues of, I just call it scaling back things we were doing. I said, that's not what I'm here.
Mm-hmm. But it sounds like you speak well of Lou Collins. You had a good relationship generally, and you felt that overall he was there and the administration was there and gave you a lot of latitude to do these things. But still, there were points where you felt strategically, at the very least, I'm sure, you had to sort of say, you know, no, this is...
Yeah, you know, we had other things. I mean, we did the first ever urban parade of homes. That was a major success. You know, I'm not going to take some credit for helping implement it, but it came at the request of an outside group, the Home Builders Association of Illinois, when they weren't having successful parades of homes in the suburbs. They wanted to do one in the city. Mm-hmm. And that was in the mid-90s, and that was at a good time for that to occur. What else happened back then? But no, we had a good relationship over that time period.
Yeah. Go ahead.
How do you feel, you know, either when you first came here, just in general, what do you feel like the division's been between work you've been doing that is kind of things like the, you know, the ceremonies and receptions that you're talking about, where you're doing something that everyone can kind of see, or the things that you're doing, maybe behind the scenes sounds too covert. But the things that you're doing that aren't, you know, kind of big and showy and kind of
that was equally or more important than stuff that was showy, because you had to have relationships with people, you had to have discussions with people that were off the record, and you needed to know what they really wanted to do and how and what their issues or what their opposition was. So if you know that going in, then you don't have a confrontation; you have a negotiation.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're able to move some things around that way. So you do it on the outside, you do it on the inside, you know. One big example of that, another good example, was when we basically changed the name of Brownsville. I mean, if you look back and see when there was a popular, it was just known as the South Side. It was Brownsville historically, then 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, it was just kind of South Side, you know. So that was the time when we were trying to look at the city was coming up with new community names. I remember two in particular I always reference, West Haven, which is over there by the United Center, and Chicago's New East Side. Well, Chicago never had an East Side, but they had the big banners, Chicago's New East Side. So we need to do something different out here. So we organized, I'm mixing stories here, but IIT wanted to move the L out of the middle of campus because it was, anyway, it's too much of the issues, but anyway.
Yeah, but important story. We've heard from other sources about that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we spent thousands, if not, not tens of thousands of dollars. In the transportation studies, Parker, Brinkerhoff, and somebody, transportation consultants, you know what the name is, don't you? To reroute the L from basically 41st Street over to the Metro Line north and then connect it back in at 19th Street, 18th Street, and basically go around campus. The only thing was, this came right after CTA spent $300 million to shore up all the foundations, footings, and stations and everything. So they weren't particularly amused or pleased with us wanting to reroute something they just spent $300 million on. But the discussion was that we were able to get the community to support it, to support the rerouting of the L, but we had to do a much larger land use study, not only from 31st to 39th like IIT wanted to do, but the community said, let's take it from 22nd to 51st, and then actually we'll go even farther to 67th and Cullerton as secondary areas. So we agreed to do that. So that was kind of a transitional time, so we called it the Mid-South Strategic Redevelopment Plan. It was a blueprint for Southside redevelopment for the next 15, 20 years. But during that time period, we said, there was all this discussion about these other new community names. So the discussion was whether or not we would rename the South Side, or the transitional name, Mid-South, to either Bronzeville or Black Metropolis. So I was taking care of the institutional people, and the community was taking care of the community. So I convened a meeting with our president, president of Vandercook, ICO, DeLaSalle, Draper and Kramer, not their presidents, but a couple of VPs from them and from Habitat. And we had a meeting up on campus, and we started talking about names, and someone threw out a name. How about East Bridgeport? No. Then someone threw out another name called McCormick Shores. How about a historical name called either Brownsville or Black Metropolis? Brownsville was less racially polarizing, and that's what we came up with. So the institution said we like Brownsville. So meanwhile, the community's over at Black Metropolis, Brownsville, so they said Brownsville, and used the Black Metropolis as a name of organizations. Black Metropolis Convention and Tourism Bureau, the Black Metropolis Community Development Plan, et cetera, et cetera. So Brownsville became the unofficial name of the community. And then we had the opportunity around the same time when we did the CTA thing and changed the name of the station from Tech 35 to Brownsville IIT 35th Street.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we got the murals and all that other stuff on the wall. That was part of the group of the Mid-South Planning and Development Commission took leadership on that. But that was how we changed the name of Brownsville. Then the cities started incorporating it, and you start seeing next year Brownsville creeping into the neighborhood map, and then so-and-so in Brownsville. So it was never an official so-called designation, per se, but that kind of coincided with another kind of community thing we did. I'm not sure if it was the Blues Festival or the Jazz Festival, but there was always a stipulation that the performers could only perform at the downtown event, not anything out anywhere else in any private clubs or neighborhoods, but we were able to get a small group on 43rd Street at the King Center over there. Mm-hmm. And then actually a few years after that, the city then incorporated that as well as the neighborhood version of the Jazz Festival. So so that was something else that able to accomplish back in the day.
Changing the L and renaming a community designation, these are all high-profile sorts of things, and we all hear that the second mayor, Daley, is very hands-on, and of course he's a Southsider himself.
Yeah.
How early on did your team or broader teams within IIT become aware of his interest? And
He started his job the same year I started mine. 89 was when he got elected. And then so we had numerous conversations with the mayor, a lot of them. Keeping in mind at that time, the woman who is now the alderman, Pat Dow, was at the time a deputy commissioner for the planning department, and she wrote the proposal that created the Mid-South Strategic Development Plan, and then came back
Alderman Tillman was the alderman here, Pat Dow was the director of the Mid-South Development, Planning and Development Commission. Mm-hmm. So we were able to use those kind of relationships that folks had with or in government and with government to try to make a difference.
Yeah. At that point in the mid-90s, Dowell and Tillman are working together well?
No.
All right.
No.
I understand eventually they did come to
no, what No, what happened was, and I know this very accurately because I was on the search committee for the new director of Mid-South, mm-hmm. and Dow was still deputy commissioner. One of the guys wanted to tell Alderman Tillman, or whether she was running in the, during the campaign, that the deputy commissioner for planning is going to be the director of Mid-South. Hadn't even offered her the job yet, because I knew I wasn't. I was on the committee. But he was trying to make points with the alderman. So the alderman then runs downtown and tells Valerie Jarrett, who was the commissioner for the planning department at that time, that I bet you didn't know that your first deputy is going to take the job out here at Mid-South. And so Valerie was a bit miffed, to say the least. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't true. None of this was true. None of it was true. So then at some point we just said Pat was in trouble with the city from the alderman and the commissioner's perspective. So she said, well, if she took the job, then the Mid-South couldn't get any resources or support from the city for at least 2 years, but we live with that. So we offered her the job, mm-hmm. and she took it.
All right.
And those first 2 years were very rough because there was no city support. The Alderman Tillman was thinking that Pat was there to position herself to take her out of the job. And what happened 8 years later, 12 years later, 16 years later, however many it was? It happened. So.
But they didn't hurt IIT.
No. We had great relationships with Tillman during the time period.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, we had a pretty good relationship with her during that time period. As we deal with the other elected officials here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And you had a big role in the Harold Washington Cultural Center at 47th and
Not really. We unofficially helped out in establishing their computer lab that was in there. It wasn't anything with the building itself, but we helped them conceive of and plan a computer lab that was used for the community. At that time, you have to remember too, this is mid-90s, okay? Mm-hmm. When I started here, we didn't have internet access in Brownsville. We may have had dial-up service, but at the USC where we were trying to replicate their, what I call their email program, where you got USC students working with high school kids and helping with their mm-hmm. class assignments and stuff. We couldn't do that because we didn't have dial-up. So we were heavily into the planning, development, implementation of various community computer labs. We put one over in Stateway Gardens in the library over there. We put one in the Harold Washington Center. We put one in the tower the Urban League ran. We had another one up on 48th and Wabash. We had them all over the place mm-hmm. that our students at that time were able to help set them up. One of the things that changed in our office is that, I think that was right at that time, we had the federal work-study program in our office. So it was a community service component. That's right, Lou asked me to take that over because we were losing money because we didn't have enough community service placements. So I took it over, and that was at the time we started doing all the computer labs. I think that was around the same time period. I'm going to check my files that I gave you.
I don't know how you can quantify this, but it sounds like we're still in the 90s, mid-90s, yeah. which is cool. It's hard to quantify, but how many hats do you feel you were wearing at that point? I know you had one official position, but how many, if you kind of go back in time 20 years ago, how many hats do you feel you were wearing?
I had the position of community relations. I was basically doing a lot of my own media work. I was doing a lot of our own fundraising. We got grants from HUD, MacArthur Foundation, that time, as well as continuing the grant we had from Kemper when I started. So that's media, community organizer, fundraiser, troubleshooter, negotiator, advocate. You know, depends on what you have to do.
Yeah. How, it sounds like you're busy enough, and I know you said at your farewell that you have some level of concern or, you know, understanding the sacrifice your family made in terms of all things you're doing.
Yeah.
So you probably weren't getting involved in politics, you know, or were you out there actually?
I never got involved in politics. Okay. I'd always been a community organizer and always working for a nonprofit. Mm-hmm. So we were always limited by what we could do anyway.
Okay. All right.
But I think there was a difference between partisan politics and what we made a very distinct difference between voter and citizenship education
mm-hmm.
and voter registration, mm-hmm. which we did a lot of that informally before I got here, not so much when I was here, but we participated and worked with other organizations that may have, in fact, done voter registration drives, which we try to get our students registered to vote. But, yeah, it's just stuff that we did. And it took a lot of hours.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if you're here, you're not at home.
Yeah. Right, yeah. I know that, so you probably didn't have any regrets. Students of Chicago history know that the 1980s were, you know, an amazing period for black politics in
mm-hmm.
Chicago.
Yep.
And you probably had a lot of friends and associates who were close with Thurgood Washington.
Oh, very much, yeah.
And all that. And
The only reason I wasn't any closer was because my wife was pregnant at that time. My son was born in February of 83. So you know then that all the campaign stuff was happening
right then.
Right before that. So I was I wasn't doing anything. I was doing what I needed to do at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
But still trying to be supportive. And anyway, that's why I'm still knowing. I see a lot of those folks still around.
From what you also was said at your reception, the inside track and outside track, it was one of the memorable things.
I didn't say
things.
That. Alderman Dow said, if I remember correctly, Alderman Dow said that, but that was always an mm-hmm. approach that mm-hmm. I think needed to be used, whether or not I was here at a small community-based organization.
Mm-hmm.
Those who are on the inside know what you can do and frankly get away with. And you're in a better position, then you can start trying to negotiate up front with whoever you're dealing with because you know what the situation is better. I said, you can try that if you want. And I don't care if you do, it doesn't work, then you may have a fallback position. But if you do it this way, you may be able to have another longer relationship. So it was just a lot of negotiation at that point. And there's one thing I didn't mention. I think I mentioned this at the reception too, that I actually worked with a group called the Council on Post-Secondary Education. And that was with a gentleman by the name of Silas Purnell, who was with a group called 8S McKinley, and his job was getting African-American kids into college. And he was working with a number of other institutions, Northeastern Illinois University, City Colleges, IIT, and some other folk. They had this Council on Post-Secondary Education. So I was going to meetings with them before I actually started here to get a sense of what IIT was trying to do and how they were going about doing it to get more kids into the school here. So.
Good. Let's
see.
Do you, if you don't mind, I want to circle back just a second to
well,
talk.
I don't mind circling back.
Okay. I want to talk, when you were talking about the Bronzeville designation for the neighborhood, mm-hmm. it was kind of making me think about the history of Bronzeville and how, you know, area that is on campus now
mm-hmm.
was once, you know, kind of the heart of that neighborhood. And do you feel as though... I think at this point the university publicizes that to some degree
mm-hmm.
and tries to let people know that. Do you feel like the university was equally interested in people knowing that, or were they a little sheepish given the fact that
Yeah, the old jazz district, the stroll, all those great things.
I think, first of all, most of the folks in the, let me go back a little bit. Most of the folks at the university didn't know that history anyway. The other thing that happened, though, is I started in 89, and I think we celebrated our centennial in 91. Mm-hmm. So what that did, it allowed us to go back and recall the days when Duke Ellington played here and some other things. So it gave us an opportunity to reflect on some of the history. So at that time, we had adopted the Douglas Academy, now it's known as Pershing West, and set up a, we actually had a fundraiser for him here on campus in Herman Hall with, I think it was Mercer Ellington Band, and Joe Williams was a vocalist at that time. And then we had a, that was a, basically the fundraiser, and it helped fund the Douglas School math and science lab. But that was the occasion then that started talking about the stroll. Uh-huh. And what was down there. Then, uh-huh. whatever year that was, when the city was celebrating the cows, when was that, early 2000s? Or?
It was 1999.
99? Okay. Uh-huh. Well, 99 is when we had a concert on campus to reflect back in those days. We got First Church Deliverance Choir, Pilgrim Baptist Church Choir, Samuelson. Tim came out and took colored chalk and went all up and down State Street between about 34th and 33rd Street, 35th Street, uh-huh. and laid out different places around on the sidewalk. Uh-huh. And we got a player piano.
Oh, very cool.
In Crown Hall, and had a little thing up there about the history and stuff. So that was a real good event to bring the community on campus and literally tell them and show them what was here, mm-hmm. and also be able to show campus folks what was here and why.
Yeah.
Then we had another external group that was concerned about various buildings that were torn down. We lost the Jordan building. We didn't get to save that, but we saved the Overton, the B, and that was kind of like the beginnings of the Supreme Life. That's when Harold Lucas was identified as the person who was basically saving Bronzeville from a lot of the stuff that was being torn down here.
Yeah.
So we got, the university became involved in that fight. We went out and boarded up the Overton building, keep it from being torn down, dedicated a playground to late Senator Margaret Smith's husband on 36th and 37th and Wabash. So it got Lou out in the community. Uh-huh. Actually got him planting some trees at the Stateway one time, too. And playing Santa Claus for kids.
So part of your role was not just you being an advocate.
It was turning the university into
an advocate as well.
Exactly. Yeah. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
We did all kinds of stuff.
I was, just to sort of tie in a different sort of thing, I was at the History Museum in the 1990s when we started doing some community documentation, sent historians down here, and we actually ran into Margaret Burroughs, who was feeling that perhaps now the rest of the city is starting to take an interest in our history, but don't you be taking it.
Because
DuSable has a certain direct interest and whatnot. How was your relationship with Margaret Burroughs and DuSable?
Oh, well, that went back to when I was a senior in high school.
Okay.
And Dr. Burroughs' house was the DuSable Museum at that point. And began to take a tour of that, and it's right across from the Southside Community Arts Center. And then years later, I found out about our relationship with them back in the WPA days, I guess. But we just did what had to be done, to be honest with you. And we tried to find individual champions internally. And it just kind of evolved, to be honest with you. The strategy is you keep raising the bar to get to be so high you can't lower it again. So that's what the deal is. So if you try to go back, it's not going to be accepted because you know that you can do more and you have done more. I don't know, did I answer that completely?
No, that's fair. This is kind of more of a general philosophic question, then we can get back to specifics or whatever, but one thing I've appreciated about you is trying to educate the IIT community about the history around here, something that a number of us are really passionate about.
And that's the one thing
And you had the great thing in 1999. It seems like that needs to be done every year.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been frustrated about the fact that consciousness really hits, doesn't really hit on campus, or it's just the nature of the business here that the school is not going to really pay
attention?
No, what
is it? You know, what really happened, in my opinion, and I have had a chance to look at it from different perspectives. When we were in the 90s, late 80s, early 90s, even early 2000s, we didn't have any money. The school didn't have any money, but we still did stuff. You know, we were still able to do it. You know, ultimately, financially, that was not necessarily the best decision to make. And then when you had cutbacks, then that severely hurt the community component, because that's always the last one that, you know, is looked at, or is some people view it not as being integral to the mission of a university. I have to make it differently, you know, and that's what I've done differently. But I think, given leadership style and given an understanding of what the situation is, then I think there can be a lot more engaged across the university. I mean, when John came in and Anderson came in 2007, we shifted our role at that point by looking at the academic side of campus more and engaging the community with the academic side. So we had an arts and culture portfolio, we had an education portfolio,
mm-hmm.
Health and sustainability, energy and sustainability, housing planning, community development. So things that we did in those areas, we tied in academically.
Mm-hmm.
Or got folk, we had faculty members that would go out and assist in teaching the class construction management. Or we would host jazz shows on campus, or we would support a local nonprofit and doing a play, or we would work with the colleges more so, like the Stewart involved in some capstone projects, or IPROs. That's probably the biggest area.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the 90s, we got a grant from MacArthur, and a portion of that grant was used for IPROs. And faculty submitted RFPs to us, and we had the Southside Partnership Group I referenced earlier, reviewed those proposals, and then we selected who was going to get funding for the IPRO. But I was pleasantly surprised at that time, and I don't know why the number sticks out to me, but I think we had over 16 faculty members that submitted proposals, and we had almost twice that number that indicated an interest to submit. You know, about half of them did, but still, I was very pleased with that, with the interest that the faculty showed in the community at that point.
Yeah. I remember you saying one point, it was a conversation you and I had along the way, where you said, yeah, you're responsible for community relations, and that means Villa Park as well as Southside.
Yeah.
And I thought that was an interesting comment. So you're clearly trying to change the university in a certain sort of way in terms of thinking more responsibly, and not just about its immediate concerns with the neighborhood, but the community in a broader term.
Well, see, part of that, I was just mad, too, to be honest with you, be very honest with you, because it was again, stereotyping me. African-American male, coming in, doing stuff here on campus in the black community.
Right.
I said, no,
right.
I'm the director of community relations for IIT, not the main campus, so I'm going out to the Rice campus. What's out there? I go out to the Moffitt campus. What's out there?
Yeah.
To make sure that everybody understood, my role is director of community relations for the whole university, not just part of it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they got that understanding, then I just focused where I was needed most, right back here. But that was something I very definitively, conscientiously had to do, and meet with the folk and tell them who I was and what I did, and what I expected from them. And then when John came on, and then we did the outreach advisory committee, that just formalized that process by having all of our other campuses involved and talk about the things they're doing respectively in their communities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that worked.
Yeah, it worked. Yeah, all very right. much so. I mean, I had a project in Pembroke, Illinois, because one of the faculty members had a
a grant, and I'm not going to tell who it was, but wanted to arbitrarily change the site from Arizona to Pembroke or something like that. So, and they couldn't do it, but I'd identified the groups in Pembroke. We had the well. We worked with the general counsel's office as to who would own the well, who has responsibility and liability for it. You know, we had our students ready to go. Then the grant program office, you can't do that. I think nobody approved you to do it there. You know, something she was doing two years before. But so that was Pembroke. And then, like I said, go out to the Rice campus, do the same stuff.
What are the projects in the 90s that required the most midnight oil, things that really were kind of most intense that had to be dealt with?
It was probably just the proposals we had to write. I mean, that was the thing at that point. I'm not going to say that one. Uh-huh. But we got some good grants at that time, and it helped us internally because we were bringing in money, you know, at the same time. But the parade of homes was a big issue. That was in the mid-90s. The name over the Dan Ryan is a big issue. I'm curious to hear how that might have been characterized, how that happened.
You're free to characterize as well.
Okay, well, I will. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you exactly what happened. I remember it was characterized before.
Go for it.
Okay, so at that time, my office was in the main building on the fifth floor, and I'm looking down out of my office on the Dan Ryan, and at that time, the CDOT was fixing up all the bridges crossing the Dan Ryan. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying, why don't we do one special? We're going on 31st and 35th Street, make it look a little bit different, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was this guy named Mark, I keep getting his last name. I want to call him Mark Spencer, but his most recent position was he's a general counsel for NASCAR. He went from White Sox to NASCAR, which wasn't bad. But Mark got me into this meeting one day, and when I got in the meeting, at the appropriate time, I raised my hand, I introduced myself, I told him Leroy Kennedy, Community Relations at IIT, and you know, doing these bridges and they're going to last forever, they're going to last another 50 years. Let's make it different. Let's make it stand out. Let's make it something. And it just so happened that the guy who was in charge of CDOT was an IIT alum at that point. So he was very open to the idea. Mm-hmm. And we spent tens of thousands of dollars on dumb designs for the overpass. One was just a series of baseball bats there. Another one was a big clock with baseball bat hands. I still have some of that stuff in my old file somewhere.
Oh, okay,
it's
cool.
Ridiculous.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, the question came down to the type of design that would require the least amount of maintenance, because it's over the Dan Ryan and all these other fancy lights and LEDs, and you couldn't use it. So anyway, after a series of meetings, they had to get things done. They had to get things done by the time of the Cubs Sox game for that weekend. Mm-hmm. But they did give a commitment to work with us and work with the community on whatever up there. So it was actually us, White Sox, and CDOT. Mm-hmm. That was it. And, I'm sorry, CTA. Mm-hmm. So it all worked out okay. The only thing different is that because of the placement on the side of the, you can only see IIT or LNS Institute of Technology coming from one direction,
right,
because you can't see from the other direction because of the station that goes so far down.
Right.
But as far as it being a destination point, White Sox put money into it. I think we put a little bit into it also. But that was major. I mean, you can see the LNS Institute of Technology, a million people a year, you know, across the Dan Ryan. If you want to do a little research, look up a Chicago Tribune article, and it talks about it on the front page of a Sunday article. And then that Monday, that's when Mark called me. Mark said, Leroy, did you see the Tribune on Sundays? Take a look at it. I read it, and it was just a total fabrication of what really happened.
You mean in terms of the process of
getting to that point? Yeah. Okay. And it actually worked. David got involved in it. I was reporting to David at that point. But anyway, that's something that major benefit for university.
Yeah,
nobody
yeah.
ever talked about. They didn't even want to have a ribbon cutting. I was specifically told I didn't need to go to the ribbon cutting.
Huh.
Hmm. You know, so stuff like that. When you talk about why I left,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
some of it.
All right. Would
nobody's
the president take it, or they would just kind of not even have the ribbon cutting?
I don't even know what they did. I really don't know at this point.
Okay.
I don't remember.
Okay.
I was just that aggravated about it at the time. So nobody else in the whole damn history of the university got their name up in front of a million people over the damn right every day.
Yeah.
And don't want to give any credit to me for doing that. You don't kiss
yeah,
my
yeah.
ass.
Yeah, yeah.
And you don't need that at that either.
Did IIT put any goofy designs out? The team that was working that is.
Well, the one thing we had at that point, which was good, we had a professor named Porter Johnson. And Porter would always do the physics of baseball. So,
mm-hmm. Porter, I remember that.
Yeah, Porter's passed now, I believe. But,
yeah, I remember.
But he had these other things that were engaging us with the White Sox for our students to get involved in, either through iPros or some other stuff. But
mm-hmm.
now, most of the money was paid to design firms to come up with stuff.
They gave you final product or whatever. Okay.
They thought it was the final product.
Okay.
In between the city and CTA. And
uh-huh.
No, it wasn't final. I'm a long shot.
Okay, so that's late 90s? I'm trying to remember. Or is that?
Or is now, all these years are running together now.
Okay.
I'd probably say it was maybe mid to late, I don't know.
Okay. I remember I was here in Chicago in the 90s, and I remember Democratic conventions here in 1996.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when Mayor Daley had all the overpasses in the loop redone, and
yeah,
now they're
yeah.
falling apart after 20 years, but is that being charitable or not charitable? So it's part of that whole.
Yeah. That was also the time when we held our first main campus master planning committees,
mm-hmm.
and that was at the same time the U of I was going through its expansion, whenever
mm-hmm.
that was, and the USC was doing whatever phase it was in over there.
Yeah, yeah.
But we were the only group at that time to have a community advisory board to be involved with us as it was evolving. And I remember it was an editorial, I think that was in the Tribune also,
mm-hmm.
that said that our neighbors to the west and to the south should look at what we're doing here and engage the community and not be in a constant battle with them about what you're going to do. Don't think. That made ours a lot different and a lot easier. I mean, it just tell the story and stop it there. But we actually had a whole lot easier because we were just doing everything on our own campus,
mm-hmm.
on our own existing footprint, and they were going off other places, which obviously had made a much bigger difference.
All right.
Do you? I'm interested in. There's a lot of talk of what happened kind of on campus and, you know, work with the Bronzeville community. But I've always been interested in the interactions between the university and the community that kind of borders us to the west.
Oh, okay.
If you kind of hop over the Dan Ryan.
No, I mean, that was one of the things we did, and I stressed very significantly at that time when we were working with the students. I said, everybody's got to give back something, you know. I don't care if you're working in Chinatown, Bridgeport, Pilsen, you want to work in other communities, you want to work in your own home community, however you want to characterize it. I don't care, just do something. Doesn't matter to me. So we did programs with Boys and Girls Clubs in Bridgeport, with Mark Sheridan School. We've always had a good relationship with the Aldermanic Office, but as I was kind of referencing earlier, we went and spent more time where there was more need.
Sure.
So
yeah.
We had the relationships here in Bronzeville, more of a need. We worked a whole lot in the early years, 90s, early 2000s, with Chinatown, Chinese American
mm-hmm.
Service League. More recently, we started working with Chinatown Chamber of Commerce, and we're doing a lot more in Bridgeport, some of the businesses that went through our Enhancing Technology for Small Business program.
Mm-hmm.
NANA's right here on 33rd Street. So we had relationships with other communities. South Loop was just coming into its own. It wasn't even a neighborhood at that point.
Hmm.
To be honest with you, I mean, when Gioco's opened, it was the first restaurant in South Loop, and the only one down there. Now look at it. It was a very conscientious effort to make sure that we touched all of the communities around us because it reflected the
makeup of the city. It reflected the makeup of the students here on campus.
Mm-hmm.
So, but no, we had our relationships in all the communities.
At what point did you get to and where you said, you know, actually I'm going to stay here for the long term? Can you date that? Was family considerations part of it? What kind of?
I think family considerations were the reason why I took it in the first place.
All right.
Because, as I said, my son was born 2 years after that, after I started here. No, mm-hmm. Take that back. My daughter was, let me get my years right. I started here in 89. My son was born in 83. My daughter was not born when I started here. I think when I left in 98 or 99 and came back, that's when I thought it might be for the longer haul at that point.
All right. Okay.
Yeah, I think because the first time I was, it was always something. The first 9 or 10 years.
So by about 2000, this place seems to be cruising well enough, and you have been able to expand the concept of mm-hmm. community affairs sufficiently, and
yep.
and you're in for the rest of it.
I thought, but then again, I also know, and not saying anything negative at this point, but you know, you have new administrative leadership come in, you figure change is going to be made. Lou was here 17 years.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's inordinately long
yeah.
for a university president, twice
right.
as long as what they normally say.
Yeah.
More than twice, matter of fact. So when Anderson came in, was figuring out what was going to be the change. The biggest change is to cut my budget by $250,000.
Mm-hmm.
But we were able to replace it with some federal money, and that's how we got into doing small business development stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I understood it from a business point of view. It only made sense. And you couldn't keep doing the stuff where you were doing before,
mm-hmm.
going into the endowment to do operating and do the
mm-hmm.
right.
So. But you made that transition from Collins to Anderson,
yeah.
and just different way of managing the bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
it seems from what we can see that the vice presidencies and the various operations continue
mm-hmm.
pretty much intact through that. So
yeah.
you had a remarkable period of uninterruption in terms
well,
of
well, yeah, the funny thing about John, when he came in and said this to us later, said to me and David, he says, I don't really understand how you guys work. You're external, your community, what do you guys do? You know.
Mm-hmm.
So he said after he got here he figured it out. So then David doing government, me doing community, it was a good kind of separation of powers, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So that worked okay.
Good, yeah. Say that continuity and then the colleagues you had
yeah.
long term and whatnot. So.
Yeah, and now, you know, since Alan's been here about a year, then it's time for me to retire. I'm over 65 years of age. It's time for me to get out of Dodge
uh-huh.
and pass the torch, you know. And I can, I'll still be involved
mm-hmm.
in a lot of different things, a lot of different ways.
So how do you, I guess, if we're kind of semi-moving
chronologically? Well, we were, but not, there's a lot of time in between.
Yeah.
It's a lot of stuff this year.
Yeah.
Between 2016 and 2005 or something like that. I mean, a lot has happened because.
I was going to ask, you know.
Yeah, we're not.
When you start here. You're building, you're kind of building a structure for how community relations is going to work here.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then at a certain point, maybe around the time you left and come back, you feel like that's up and running and it's kind of doing its thing. And I was wondering how you would kind of characterize the work maybe more recently, and not speaking just in the past few years, but once those connections are made and things are built up, how did your position or what you were focusing on change?
I think one of the things that is probably bad is that, I mean, it's excellent, but it's bad at the same time. We have really great staff. We have really, really, really great staff, and that continues to this day. But before Jim got here for the Digital Media Center, we had Joy Robinson. And she'd been here at the university for years, got her PhD and left. We had another young man by the name of Chris Pinto. Chris had been here for years
mm-hmm.
and went off to the city colleges and started doing some great things there. had some good personal assistants, you know, outreach people, coordinators. I mean, we've always had a good crew. So the thing that I had to do was when, and I'd always want to foster their growth and development and getting another job or moving on with the career, and in spite of how negatively it would impact what we're doing here, but it's good for them. Mm-hmm. So it's a matter of trying to manage the staff and bring somebody in, if not the same skill sets, but another kind of skill set that we can reshape what we do.
Mm-hmm. So challenges of a middling-sized place, right?
Yeah, I mean, we always had probably no more than 4 or 5 people in our office anyway. Yeah. No more than 5 in addition to me. Mm-hmm. And it's been hovering around 4 for the most part. Now it's down to 3.
Mm-hmm.
It will be 3 anyway. But I think, I mean, we've always had great teams. We've always had a very committed staff, smart staff, passionate to understand what we're trying to do. They all get it. Mm-hmm. You know? It's not like you've got to show them a lot. Which is not the same for the university.
Okay, well, that's
But what's mm-hmm. happening, and this is what I'm saying, mm-hmm. each year we get more and more and more and more involved with individual departments. Got a new dean of business. He wants us to work with him for a couple of new programs he has. Mm-hmm. We're expanding the iPros. Jim and Jody are teaching iPros now, mm-hmm. you know, and that's expanding like crazy. Mm-hmm. We got faculty members in all the different colleges that are understand the importance of community. Even some of the deans do now, mm-hmm. which they didn't get then. Mm-hmm. You know, at least if they got, they never talked about it, never did.
Mm-hmm.
So it was always pushing the agenda, pushing the envelope from the inside. Mm-hmm. And now I don't need to do that. It doesn't, I mean, it needs to happen. Mm-hmm. Somebody needs to keep doing it, to keep the pressure on. But I think it's probably the higher number of individual faculty and deans are aware of the importance of what they do and where they are. I mean, you can't have a successful university in a deteriorating neighborhood. Simple
mm-hmm.
as that.
Yeah,
that
mm-hmm.
doesn't take IIT rocket science to figure that out.
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, anyway. It makes sense in terms of all of us who are on staff here that this university, it's sometimes you look to top leadership to set these agendas and to move them down from the top, but
doesn't
you know, you find, and I've been here for 10 years, and it's the same sort of thing. You just eventually have to say, we'll make these connections ourselves, and then try to change the culture.
Well, see, the other thing, too, though, it changes from bottom end to top. So I've had very, very, very good working relationships with a lot of different trustees over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes back to with Dirk Lohan and the master plan here and his involvement with that mm-hmm. initial piece.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other trustees, who I'm not going to name now, but
yeah.
I've had a long relationship with them. Mm-hmm. I'll give one other example, like David Vitale. David, I used to work with when he was the Metropolitan Planning Council. So he was on the board here. So I could call up David and
mm-hmm.
chat about what we needed to deal with. So it's people like that that I've known
yeah.
for a long time and knew the kind of relationship he had on our board and at First National, Chase, whatever it was in between.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always helpful.
Yeah. It's one thing we've heard that the trustees here in a way before 1990 were there but sort of underutilized. And then after 1990 there was a you know more creative staff or staff that had the sort of projects on hand where they could start leaking
yeah,
into them. And
We drove them. They did not know how to get to campus. They did not. We had trustees that did not know how to get here. We used to give them directions to come to campus,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to having a meeting downtown somewhere.
Yeah,
you know. So that's how disengaged they were.
Yeah, was it partly almost some of them fear of the neighborhood?
Yeah, sure was.
Yeah,
we have. You have to come up here on the Dan Ryan. On Lakeshore Drive. Get off on Lakeshore Drive at 31st Street. Then come across and come to campus that way. Don't come to 35th Street because then you get off the Dan Ryan and come through Robert Taylor, the
mm-hmm.
Stateway. You
know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But they moved forward. That moved forward on all those things and
start
meeting down.
Started
having
meetings on campus and that was okay.
Yeah. So in the older days, you go through the university records and all the commencements were downtown
mm-hmm.
because
right.
it was more dignified to have them downtown and not here on campus
right.
apparently or whatever.
Right.
So that's
changed. No, that's good when the trustees get more engaged like that and it always helps.
Uh-huh. Cool. we know you're turning over your papers to this unit, and they're going to be great papers. You've had great staff. Francis has been great in terms of organizing material. But what sort of stories do you think you better, that would be good to tell us, or things that we should know that we're not going to find in the papers, or the papers aren't going to help us with very much? It's kind of a tricky question. But
you know, one of the things that we didn't talk about, and I didn't like to do things by default. You know, I didn't like to do things because nobody else would do it, even though somebody else. For example, I've been here 27 years, and we've only participated in the Butt Building Parade twice. One was back in the 90s, and then the other time was when John Anderson first came here. And there was an admission fee and other things, and I couldn't get the financial support we needed to do that. And there were other offices, and we've reorganized our office on campus here, I don't know, a dozen times since I've been here. And we could have perhaps been a little less politically expedient and a bit more committed to what it is we're doing, and not just showing, as I say, showing the colors are going down.
Occasionally.
Know. Yeah. But because there was a significant entry fee for the parade, and nobody wanted to take out of their budgets, and I'd either always have to or not do it. And I said, well, look, I got the smallest budget. You don't want to do this and that. So they didn't, so we didn't.
Okay. I'm going to interrupt just for a moment here and do a quick battery change.
Okay,
we're back on.
We had a battery change, and so now we're back, and we were starting to develop the whole issue of community connection, but also the fact that this university has such a large international student body. And in one sense, it seems like that would be kind of easy, you know, a school that's already committed to diversity in a way, in a certain way. But on the other hand, it's easy to bring in an international student body, and as you've just indicated, the black percentage on campus is dropping.
Right.
And President Alan Cram has given some speeches about, well, you know, we need to really plug into this diversity and, you know, make sure we invite our students to Sox games so that they can get the American experience, and then we need to listen to them. But you're saying it's more than speeches.
It's a lot more than speeches. Just about a year ago, maybe a little bit, not quite a year ago, Jody Houlihan, who also works with me now in the office, we met with Student Government Association. And Student Government Association told us they wanted to be more acclimated, oriented, knowledgeable about the community in which the school is located here.
Yeah.
And they got to hear about Brownsville, the stroll, you know, the economic character of this community. I mean, the whole thing, they wanted to know more about it. And that's what you and I talked about as far as trying to have lectures or speeches or showing the evolution of the campus and the community and all that stuff.
But
it has to be a lot more than, there was a professor I used to work here, he left and went to Virginia Commonwealth, a young guy named David Coogan, and I always laugh at David because his subject matter was rhetoric, and I was always talking about all the rhetoric that we get, but how much little action. Coogan's, I think he's tenured now out there with, that's another story. But I keep in contact with some of our faculty too. But no, getting back, focusing in on it though. If you are in, which we are, an historic African American community, historic in the sense of politics, economics and business, sports, entertainment, and just politics being right here.
Right.
This is it.
This is it. Oscar DePriest and Mitchell and all those people all the way forward.
It's here. So you can't have all, I mean, everybody complained about how bad the schools were here. We have IIT, Vandercook, Northeastern, Lewis, as major universities and colleges that are in the area that we work together in some of the local schools. We've done that and should do it again to have a very broad outcome is just in enhancing educational outcomes. So if we're here and we're not actively telling folk that you can come here or you should come here,
I mean, when I first started here, I had students tell me that people come to their schools and say, well, we know you can't get into IIT. We just want to tell you what we have. They actually told the kids that in the damn high schools. Can you believe that? Mm-hmm. That's insane. Mm-hmm. It's totally insane. Mm-hmm. So we know that you're crazy, you can't get in, but we want to tell you what we have over at IIT. Well, why the hell are you going to be there? We're not doing anything to bring everybody up, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's not a choice between economics and finances, who gets scholarships, who doesn't, who pays. But it's having a game plan to go out and identify students who would be here, could mm-hmm. come here, mm-hmm. and that can pay their way here. They don't need to have discounts. They got all, every year there's a waiting list of kids who cannot get into the elite public high schools in the city of Chicago. There's a market out there. These same families have money to pay. Mm-hmm. We can get these kids here if we want them to, if we had the political will to do it. Mm-hmm. I've said enough.
Yeah, well, it's you've spent a lot of your career here.
Almost half, more than half.
You can't pronounce some of these things.
You know what, I mean, you're going to hear a lot more from me, and it's not going to be this interview.
All right.
I mean, seriously. All right. Because the school still has an obligation to do that.
Sure.
And if somebody doesn't make them deal with that obligation from the inside or from the out, mm-hmm. they're going to have to one way or another.
Yeah. Well, how do you feel about the prospect for, you know, bringing that greater consciousness of community and history, you know, after you're gone?
It'll happen.
All right.
It'll happen.
All right.
We have enough organizations that are out there that I'm still involved in. And I think that there's